Okay.
Just a minute, alright.
We can keep going now, we got it running again.
We got it running again?
Yeah, we're ready to roll.
When you talk about the Aleutian Islands, you are not talking about 8 or 10 islands that are on the map.
No.
There are tens of thousands of these things sticking up out of the water, and I'm always curious about it. They talked about possibly when the people started to inhabit the United States, a couple of thousand years ago or something, they come along the Aleutian chain. I'm often very curious if they didn't come across that little part of Alaska and Russia that's only about 20-some miles apart, and if that froze over, they could walk right across from one country to the other.
Sure.
I've often wondered if maybe that's not where our forefathers in America come from. That's an observation. I'm not an
archaeologist or anything.
I'm not an authority on that. I'm just a curious old soldier boy.
Well, when you got discharged, you said you got discharged in Florida?
Got what?
When you got discharged from the Army.
Was discharged in Florida. Yeah.
And then what happened? Did you use the GI Bill? Did you come back to Montana, or what did you do then?
Well, one of the buddies I showed you there owned one of those old Chevrolets that was in that picture.
Yeah.
He had it in Florida. And it was rather interesting. We drove that car in October through Florida, up through Colorado, up into Montana. And I got into a conversation with him about antifreeze. He says, I've never used antifreeze in all my life. We come from Reedley, California. That's a very famous place for raisins. The raisin capital of the world.
Yeah, down
something.
Near Fresno, yeah.
He died about 6-7 years ago. We drove over a mountain in Colorado, down into a little community. And when we got there, I said, I tried to get him to put antifreeze in it. He said, no, I've never used it. Got into this little community, and the radiator was all frozen up.
Steven.
And we drove into a little service station, and said, hey, can you fix the radiator so we can go on? He said, boy, that thing is frozen. I said, well, he didn't like antifreeze. He said, well, store it in my station. I'll work on it tomorrow. So he run it into a service station. I think they let us sleep in the city jail that night. But the next day we got up and had breakfast and went down there, and he was in there, had taken it out, and had soldered the broken parts of the radiator, and finished. A little while later in the day, he put it back in the car, and he put in antifreeze.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think the interesting thing about it is, my buddy went over to him and said, well, what do I owe you? He said, you owe me $2.
$2?
He said, yeah. He said, you guys been discharged.
Yeah.
He says, I feel honored in helping you. And about all he charged us for was the antifreeze. He took the radiator off. He soldered the radiator and put it back. And then we just drove from there back into where I lived in Great Falls.
Did you run into a lot of that where people were very grateful and very helpful after the war to you or like that? Or?
That's an interesting observation, right? Dr. Johnson, I thought, I had a lot of discussion with him about a lot of things, but he was just one of the nicest people that I ever worked with.
So you went back to Great Falls, then what'd you do?
Well, when I went up to Great Falls, I went up to, the end of October. I stayed there for a while and then came down here to Bozeman to go to the Cal College.
Cal College, right away. You were so you knew what you wanted to do. You used the GI Bill, I assume.
Right. I was tied up with the GI Bill. I come here and got a little room in a, well, lady and her husband had a, let me sleep in the, sleep in one of the rooms in their house. And I started school here in January 1946.
1946, January.
And it,
I might hold this up just a little bit.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. 1946, and you went straight through and got it in. What was your degree that you finished it?
I got a degree in engineering physics in June of 1949.
And then you got married when? You weren't married when you were in college?
No, I graduated from college.
Business then, and then went into the insurance business in Bozeman and got married and became a success.
I got married first.
First, yeah, good for you.
And and that's the reason I went in the insurance business. I looked at, you know, I sent out about 40 applications and I got a nice answer back from everybody, no offer for a job. And then after I got to thinking about it, I didn't want to go to a lot of places where I would work in engineering physics. So I got a teaching certificate, and I was going to teach. And I had two jobs in the eastern part of Montana. The outhouse was 20 or 30 feet away from each school. And the two jobs I had off, and I thought, I'm going to get a new drive and take her out, and we have an outhouse 20 feet from the building that I lived in. So when the insurance deal opened up, I grabbed it right now.
That's right. Right. Are there some other things about your time period in World War II that we didn't cover that you'd like to cover, Bert?
I got something, but I don't want to talk about it here.
Okay, all right, I understand. Something that you could put on tape. Or sure, but I understand. I mean,
there are things, you know, one of the things that interested me about the military, when I come back, I became acquainted with a fellow that lived in Billings, and he worked as a special agent of some kind. For a while, and the question has always raised a lot of curiosity with certain people. Why is it that there are some people who don't come back? He said the purpose of one of these people that don't come back, he said they're confronting these institutions. because they have various types of diseases that the government doesn't want to have brought into the United States. What they were never identified. But the fact that there were some missing in action that were confined in some areas. The authenticity, I have no way to know. But it always raised curiosity. What did some of these? I remember talking to Judge Wesley about certain diseases. I won't identify them, he's prepared with himself. But the number of the patient, it's amazing. The number of other surgeons were destroyed or moved to Korea because of their contact with various diseases that they couldn't prevent it by doing several things. I don't go into that.
No.
You can play with it.
Yeah, that's right. We've all seen some of that.
Now, you said you kept in touch with some of your close buddies all the way through since the war.
I had four buddies that I, well, you just become associated with them a little more. Than
you kind of become brothers almost.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A year ago, I found out that I lost the fourth buddy.
The fourth one they
got. So out of the five of us, I'm the only one left.
I'll be darned.
It's rather interesting because two of them, I changed Christmas cards and letters and stuff for many, many, many years.
Sure.
And the one in California that was in Reedley, he was probably the closest. I showed you the picture there, a Chevrolet in it.
Yes.
But I know these guys, we've talked about a lot of things, but it's kind of interesting that the islands that I was on in the Aleutian chain doesn't appear on television.
At all.
It doesn't. It just hasn't. I've heard it commented now once in a while, but
occasionally they'll say something about Attu or Kiska, but otherwise, you know, you never hear much about that, other than that part of the Japanese fleet went north when the other one, as a decoy, when the other one went towards Midway, wasn't it?
I don't know too much about that, other than what I have seen on the television.
Yeah, that's all
but
I know.
That's where the the biggest share of the battle was handled.
But amazing what could have happened if they'd had the kind of communications that we have today.
Yeah.
You know, we were much more vulnerable than they thought we were at that moment.
Well, I can't help but wonder if good Lord didn't help us a little bit if that 1100 fleet wound up turning around at Alaska and going back down into the Solomon, if there wasn't some help given to the United States by a
bigger power.
Bigger power.
Yes. That's right.
I mean, it's always raised a curiosity with me because if they had, Japan had also, I read in the paper here several years ago, they had put bombs into a parachute type unit or a balloon type unit or what, and there were several thousand of them, and they were put up in the wind where the wind would carry them over to the United States. I have read that there were several that landed and exploded in the United States and Canada that really didn't do a great deal of damage, but their intent was still there.
That's right. It was all there. It was all there. Well, Kirk, that maybe if you, anything else, otherwise we can wrap it up as far as the tape recorder or anything else.
Well, I'll probably
say?
Wake up at 2 o'clock and think of something.
Yeah, don't call me. Okay, let me wrap this up.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kirk Fred,
well,
so much for
you.
Taking time to do this. And this is the first time I've had any opportunity to hear much of any detail about what happened in the Aleutian Island chain during World War II. I think it's fascinating. So, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. It's been a real treat.
You're welcome.